I am Dungeon Master, your guide in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons. We're talking Dungeons and Dragons. Hit it. It was 1983. Hurricane Alicia hit the Texas coast near Galveston and Houston. The Griswolds went on a Wally World vacation. The police lamented every breath you take, and six youths were transported to a realm of fantasy, magic, and danger. I'm your host, Jerry D., with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, before I introduce my guests, it's time for the 80s word of the day. As always, this comes from the Dictionary of 1980 Slang by Rick Carlisle. Today's word is grody, adjective, disgusting, distasteful, gross. Originally in the 1960s, grody, with a T, related to the synonymous UK slang grotty. And a good example can be found in Valley Girl from 1983. Like, you know, I hear there's something really grody about the air in Hollywood, you know. Use it all the time. Now, joining me today are two very special guests. From the Dungeons & Dragons TV series group, it's Leslie and Kimmy. Ladies, what's happening?
Hey, Jerry.
Hi.
Leslie.
How are y'all doing?
Doing great. Saturday, can't beat it.
That's right, yeah. And it's been a pretty good day here. It's in the 80s, not super hot. You know, I'm here in Texas where it gets like ridiculously hot. But today was actually not bad. There was a good breeze around and took the kids Easter egg hunting earlier. So it was a good day.
Oh, that sounds fun.
We had hail, so I'm glad you're getting better weather.
Oh, no. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Darn used to hails, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, usually we're pretty lucky. We don't get a ton of hail. But when we do, it usually skips, you know, knock on wood, it usually skips our part of the Metroplex. We're kind of in a lower area, like we're really close to Grand Prairie. And so because it's like flat and low, it just kind of skips over us. And so it's, I really appreciate that. Tornadoes, hail, just kind of miss us. And I love it. But we're here to talk about Dungeons and Dragons. Yay. So before we really get into everything, you know, what's your history or what's your experience with Dungeons and Dragons? What do you remember?
Do you want to go first, Kimmy?
So my first experience was actually watching the cartoon series. I believe like the night before it aired, there was like a preview special that would show like all the new upcoming Saturday morning cartoons. And I remember seeing that one and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a little unicorn. How cute. Cause you know, very unicorns back then. So I was going to watch it and yeah. So, watching it air Saturday morning cartoons, was my intro to Dungeons and Dragons.
Nice. Yeah. What about you, Leslie?
Yeah, same here. I hadn't heard of the game, but I had seen the cartoon. So yeah, it was every Saturday morning. I had a thing where actually I was a little embarrassed because I didn't think back at the time that this was a girls' show, but I loved it. So I wanted to record it on VHS. So what I would do would be to tape about 5 minutes of another cartoon and then I'd hide the episode after that and mislabel the tape.
That's awesome.
Yes, I was, you know, 12.
I have a adjacent story to that, not regarding Dungeons and Dragons, but so when I was I think I was a senior in high school and Halloween H2O was coming out and I was dating this girl and we were going to go see it as a group, but none of us had seen the original Halloween. So I told her I had rented it because I had intended to rent it. I don't know why I used the past tense. I just said, yeah, I rented it instead of like, I'm going to rent it. Well, so I had to go to about 7 different video stores and I still couldn't find it. I ended up buying the movie But I felt bad because I told her I had rented it. So a buddy of mine had one of those plastic cases that the VHS used to come in. So I just hid it in that and pretended like I rented the movie. I don't know why I did that, but yeah, I was embarrassed to tell her that years later that I bought it. But
I did have one other story about back then. We had cable at my grandparents' house. So of course, you know, Saturday morning, go down and watch the cartoon. And it's the episode Dungeon at the Heart of Dawn, I think is which one. And there's a really uber bad guy, even Dungeon Master's terrified of him.
Yeah.
And commercial break. There's a big fight. Eric sees the face and I'm, you know, potentially going to go insane or something. And then the kids all get blasted and the cable went out. We're getting back. I need to know what happened. So I didn't find out what happened until about 20 some years later.
That's terrible.
Of that silly video. I was like, oh, they didn't die. Okay, good. Oh, this is interesting.
I remember. My history is actually quite different. So I remember the cartoon. But there was, and I don't remember what show, but there was another show that I used to really love that was on at the same time. So I would flip back and forth. And so I was never really super into it. But about 10 years ago, a friend of mine wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons. And I said, oh, yeah, like the cartoon. Because I'd never played it before. So he's like, no, not like the cartoon, you know, the game. And so I started playing the game. I ended up basing my character that I created on Hank. Because Hank was my favorite, and he's the only one I remembered from the cartoon. I played. I really wanted to find it, so I started looking, and online you could find various, you know, clips of them. And of course, now on YouTube they have the entire show. And so I binged it a couple of months ago, and I was really, really, really trying to find a way because I remembered Hank so much. He was like my favorite character. I've always been drawn to like the leader character, the, you know, the more responsible one, I guess, because I'm an older child, you know, the oldest, I don't know. But so I was super excited to cover this. And when I found that on YouTube, I went straight through it again. I started doing a deep dive into it, researching as much as I could, just everything, you know, joining various Dungeons and Dragons Facebook groups as well. And then I showed them to my kids. And so my kids and I got to watch some Dungeons and Dragons, and it was super cool. And my eldest daughter loved it. So, yeah, I consider that a win.
So are there Halloween costumes in the future?
I would like for there to be so, but they're, as much as they liked Dungeons and Dragons, they still like Bluey better, and a lot of these other more contemporary ones. Encanto, the last month has been all about Encanto, so I have a feeling of, I'll probably have a Bruno, a Mirabelle, and Isabella, I think is her name. I'll probably have those for Halloween. But, oh well. Can't win them all, I guess.
Next year.
That's right, yeah. Oh, man. But, you know, before we deep dive into it, let's kind of just, I'll give a brief overview of Dungeons & Dragons in general. Of course, famously created by Gary Gygax. He's the one that really was responsible for it all. The original didn't really have a ton of rules, although it did come with three books, you know, the Dungeon Master's Guide, the Character Guide, and the Monster's Guide. And you kind of would just create your own character. And this became huge, so much so that in 1983, LJN was commissioned to produce some toys for the line. And I was super stoked because I had a couple of the toys, and I actually saw some of those toys in the episodes. Now, not a lot of them came out, but, you know, Kellick.
I only desire the power of teleportation, the ultimate power over all matter. You shall give a part of it to me, and soon it shall all be mine. All will kneel to Kellick. Even Venger will call me master.
And Warduke was there.
It's about time you got here.
Time I have plenty of. What have you got?
I've got a jewel for the crown of your master.
Is he?
No. The red glow indicates a life force is still with him. Tell Venger that Dungeon Master is his for the right price. Now go.
I remember that episode with Warduke was like my favorite because the character looks so cool with the the Batwing helmet, and yeah, you couldn't see his face. It was just, you know, the gladiator type garb. So seeing the car, you know, the cartoon when and knowing that, you know, I had that toy was like awesome. But yeah, they developed the cartoon, and for some reason they didn't like collaborate very much with LJN, and so the toy really, aside from those two and Tiamat, of course, none really came out at all. And so you could tell you could tell whoever created the toys didn't really play the game. I mean, Ringle Run, the wizard, I don't know. But anyway, so the cartoon was produced. It starred six kids. I think that's why I really, really loved it, because they were like, you know, our age, you know, we could relate to them. It's not like, and I love Spider-Man. I love G.I. Joe, but you know, they were adults. So I really just, as much as I loved them, this one really drew me in. Not only the fantasy and all that, because I love Clash of the Titans and you know, Conan the Barbarian and all those, but I mean, just the kids I could relate to. So I thought it was really cool.
It's so relatable, because it could have been any of us at any amusement park getting on a coaster mm-hmm. car. And I don't know about you guys, how many roller coaster cars you jumped into after watching the cartoon.
Hoping that you could go.
So Six Flags Great America in Northern Illinois, or maybe it's Wisconsin, I can't remember now. They actually had a roller coaster called the Demon, and you at some point you go over a couple of loops and then you go into a mouth, right? So I was for it on that
ride. You're like, come on, take me there.
So close. And
I mean, it's a cool concept when you think about it. You know, you're just regular kids transported to another world. It's very like, you know, John Carter of Mars and a lot of those types of stories. But, you know, they're kids. And so that adds like just an extra element. I mean, the youngest was what, 9, I think. So I was about Bobby's age. But then you had Hank, who was like 15. I mean, he's still... I mean, he's barely shaving at this point, you know, so it's not like they have a lot of experience. And you have to imagine that when they finally return home after this extended period in this, you know, other realm, they're going to be like ridiculously hard to relate to people, I think. You know, they're used to just monsters everywhere and creatures and traps and dangers. Like, how do you just go get a burger after that? I don't understand.
Over your shoulder, any noise? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do they sleep on their beds, or is that too much for them? I don't know.
Fan fiction out there speculating on that.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going back.
You know, and I probably I would want to go back myself if I had gone through all that and finally made it home. As much as I like Christmas and everything, you know, Chick-fil-A and whatever else that's easy, I mean, I think I'd probably want to go back just because I don't think I could cope with that after that.
I was going to say, yeah, you'd be, that's the life you're used to, depending on how long you've been there. That's what you're used to, day in, day out, and come back to normal.
Did they ever specify how long the kids were actually there?
No, I think... the majority of fans, when it's been polled before over the years, I think we tend to guesstimate that it's about a year per season, roughly. Okay. I've heard that been talked about before.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Roughly. The other question was, is time passing at the same rate on Earth? Because there was one kid who said that he couldn't go to the park because he had homework. And then he was kidnapped by a beast later that night. So at least a day has passed. But and it is night later on when they go back for an episode, or briefly. So is it the same amount of time passing or not? That was another speculation.
Yeah. Oof, man, so many questions. I don't know, but I'd like to know. I you know, it's one of those series that I think they could continue. You know, they're doing all these you know, Ghostbusters Afterlife, all these not retreads, but you know, revivals, I should say. Why not start this off again? I think it could be a really cool show. Maybe somehow the original kids get sucked back in and have to mentor some other kids or their own children. I don't know, but I think it would be a cool idea for them to continue on.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see. I think on that, along those lines, I think I would rather see a continuation of the series than a complete reboot of it. Just personally, only because that's the characters we've grown up with and know and love, and this is how they are, and we spent already all this time invested in them. So it'd be really, it'd be really fun to see a continuation.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But who is y'all's favorite? Which character?
When I learned about the D&D game, the first question I asked was, of course, okay, I want to play Sheila, and I want the magic cloak. And my friend told me, that's not quite how it works. And no, you don't get a magic item that powerful right away. I'm like, well, I don't play that.
Forget it. I'm out.
When I was younger, it was Sheila. She was my favorite.
Yeah, you know, being probably most related to Sheila at my age when I first started watching, and the cloak was really cool. But I do like Sheila's a favorite character, and I do like Hank and Sheila together as a couple as a favorite character. So I think that counts, right?
I think they totally get together, right? They gotta.
No question.
Because Diana's with the, she might end up with that star child or whatever his name was.
Star, yes. Star Gray looked a little bit like young Michael Jackson at the time.
He totally did. Yes. Yeah. He really did. That's awesome. Yeah. I like I mentioned earlier, Hank was always my favorite. I loved his bow. I think out of all the weapons, that was like the coolest weapon to me. As a little boy, it was just like, of course I want the bow. I think I would have liked Eric if he hadn't been so arrogant, I suppose. and also he had the cool shield, but like I always wanted him to have like a sword. I always wondered like, where's his sword? You could see it drawn, in certain comics or every once in a while, but you never had it. And that always kind of bummed me out.
Yeah, it's interesting that in some of the merchandise that came out, like the UK annuals, I forgot until I dug them out and looked at them again, just in how many stories Eric is using a sword. Not that it's magic, just a regular sword, but tandem with his shield. So I thought that was very interesting because you do not see that in the cartoon.
No, you really don't.
Mm-mm. They also, in those UK annuals, had Presto have a magic pouch instead of a magic hat, which I was like, wait, did you even watch the cartoon? What is this?
So it's funny, doing the show, of course, I've covered He-Man and She-Ra's Christmas special and a few others, but I found that they actually have a whole line of like comics based on these 80s properties in the UK, and they're not canon, really. But a lot of them do cover Christmas and Christmas episodes. So even obscure like toys, like the Centurions had their own comics. But usually, there were all sorts of weird choices that they would make that just didn't really have anything to do with anything. So like in the Christmas, in one of the Christmas comics for He-Man, Orko creates like chocolate soldiers or something. It's the most ridiculous thing that I don't know how that would work, but it's fantasy, so okay, why not? But it a magic pouch, it actually doesn't surprise me very much because that seems quite in line with what, some of those writers would do. It's like they kind of knew about the property, but not a lot. And I think that's basically how it went.
Yeah, it's interesting to see like in the annuals, just how the stories differ from what we're familiar with in the episodes of the cartoon itself.
So. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, a lot of liberties taken, adaptations, and I get it. Sometimes things don't always transfer from book to screen or screen to book. I understand, but it is. It's interesting. I'm a huge comic book nerd, so I love multiversal, writing, and so I just like tend to think of all these different things as different universes. They're all just a one big multiverse. So that's the only way like my little brain can figure it all out. But, before we like really dive into this Christmas episode, because we were talking about this UK annual, and there's actually is a Christmas story in the annual, and I really want to get into it. But before we get into that, let's talk about episodes. Like, what's your favorite, or what are some of your favorites? Because it's hard to just pick one. There really are some fantastic episodes out there. What about you, Leslie?
I narrowed it down to four. So,
okay. Okay.
So, first of all, I think my all-time favorite is still City at the Edge of Midnight. That's the one with Ramud and just the kids getting a father figure for even a night was just, oh, I love that one for its sheer heart, you know? Mm-hmm. Even if Ramud thinks Sheila's younger than she is and gives her a doll. But Eric saying who was better than Eric's father ever was. It's just like, oh, so I really loved that one. And it's got some really awesome visuals, and the night monster is really, really creepy. So
remember the dummy who said forget going to that city? Well, forget forgetting it. Let's get that thing open.
That's where they save his daughter, right?
Yes.
And, he doesn't he even offer them to stay with him?
Uh-huh. And why didn't they stay with him? I would have stayed
for
with
real.
Him.
Right.
I think they just really wanted to go home, I guess.
She's searching for the way home.
Yeah.
Find it if they stay with Ramud.
Right.
Did it bother anybody that you know Dungeon Master could just snap his fingers and send them back? I mean, did that ever bother you watching the show? Because that used to bother me a lot. Like,
well, I didn't actually know if that was true. I mean, it hints that that's true in the annual story, but I always got the feeling that while he might have called them there, that he didn't actually have the power to snap his fingers and send them home. Just because when Eric got to be DM for a day, which is my second pick, that he had to go to the knowledge book, right? And they had to. So I don't know.
That's a good point.
This is so that I can still like Dungeon Master as a character, because if he could. Oh, what a jerk.
But see, I still kind of liked him, because I figured this was all part of a plan to help just make the realm safer and, you know, less evil. And so he's kind of helping them also grow as people and characters. But yeah, I don't know. And that's a really good point that I hadn't thought of, which you're right. I mean, of course, Eric could have done it, or maybe Eric couldn't have done it, but it's just, I don't know, it bothered me. I always thought, this guy can do it. I know this guy can do it. Why is he keeping him around? But yeah. But that's a great episode, yeah.
Yeah, especially in that episode where they go into the creepy maze and they find the bodies of former pupils of Dungeon Master. I was like, okay. So maybe this isn't the first group of people that DM pulled out of the world somewhere, but maybe it was the first group of kids. Maybe he's like, all right, I can't get adults to survive, so maybe I'll take some kids instead.
Got to be pure of heart.
Keywords. Yeah.
Pure of heart.
Definitely. So same thing. I kind of have a few episodes that are my favorites. Like I mentioned earlier, the Valley of the Unicorns with Kellick. Because I had the toy, thought that was so cool. And then just, you know, seeing Venger like stomp all over him later on, I thought was kind of fun. So that one I enjoyed. I also liked, of course, the one with War Duke, but the Dragon's Graveyard. Mm. That one I think is a fantastic episode. And it gets dark. I mean, Hank even, you know, tells Bobby, like, you know, no one your age should hate someone as much as you do right now.
I don't know anything I could do for you, Uni, except make Venger sorry.
Bobby, I'm worried about you. No kid your age should hate anybody this much.
Like I said before, Hank, don't worry about me. Worry about Venger.
I mean, that's crazy that they even got away with some things like that, you know, through the censors. I know there was like a couple of episodes they were scared were going to be pulled, and then they ended up, you know, not being pulled after all. But I mean, this is just one of those shows that I think the level of writing was like much higher quality than some of the other things out there. Again, I love G.I. Joe. It's one of my all-time favorites. But I mean, we had Cold Slither. You know, I don't know if you remember that. That's where Cobra forms a rock band to try to hypnotize people. I mean, it's crazy.
Soon, a band of vipers playing our tune with an iron fist and a reptile's hiss. We shall rule.
And you don't see anything like that in Dungeons and Dragons. I'm sorry.
Not yet. Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, that would have been an episode.
Yeah. Venger. You know, Venger would play some awesome guitar. Just shredding on the guitar.
Oh, my goodness. But I agree. That Dragon's Graveyard was probably on one of the top of my list. Like, I remember watching it the first time and being so very impressed that they would show such a serious episode and trust us kids to be able to, like, handle it without our minds exploding. Like, it was like, yeah. It was deep. Like, I remember being very impressed that they put it on, that we could watch mm-hmm. something like that. Yeah, that was just such a good episode.
I remember the next week, I was so excited to watch the next episode because I just knew that Venger would feel very strongly and deeply grateful for not dying, and they were going to be dead. Which shows how naive I was at 10.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, like, Presto, of course, that they're there in the Dragon's Graveyard, the source of, like, their weapons power. So their weapons are just supercharged. And so Presto, like, creates essentially, like, some restraints, some handcuffs for Venger. And he's trapped against a wall, and Hank is about to shoot him with his bow. So, you know, I was nervous. I was like, what's going to happen? I remember watching this thinking, like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? And he spares him. And I thought, wow, like, that's cool. That's something. That's, you know, this guy is awesome for a 15-year-old to make that decision. I mean, that takes a lot of maturity there. There's some adults that wouldn't make that decision. So it was really well done. But I know what you're talking about, because at the end of the episode, Dungeon Master says something like, you know, you've taken the first step. So I always wondered, like, okay, well, they're almost home. What's the next step? Let's go. And of course, well, we don't quite get there, but
not that fast.
No, it's just a first step.
Yeah. So, like, Dragon's Graveyard, you know, I really like Servant of Evil. I thought it was really interesting. Not only does it show, like, time passing so that Bobby has a birthday, which I thought was really interesting, but I really, really like the animation style in that particular episode. Just everything looks so good to me on that episode. And Beauty and the Bog Beast, I think, is probably my favorite for being the funniest. Like, it will still make me laugh.
Yeah.
Every time I watch it, like, when Presto, like, and Diana see Eric turn into the Bog Beast, when Presto can't hold it together anymore. He's disgusting. Cracks me up till no end. Yes, that episode will make me laugh out loud.
Again, that's a good one. Yeah.
Just for that comic relief.
Yeah, out. Eric turns essentially. He becomes a bog beast, and he kind of has to break the spell. And I felt so bad because they actually make it home, but then they have to go back to save Eric. I mean, the friendship and the bonds that they create, it's super cool, because, I mean, if they had a chance to go back, not many people would do it. So, yeah, I was very impressed that they chose to do that as well. Yeah. But yes, it is funny seeing Eric as a bog beast. I may or may not be referencing that later on.
With the frog in his throat.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, that was a fun one. So many great episodes. Like City at the Edge of Midnight, Child of the Stargazer, Last Illusion, Day of the Dungeon Master. Those, like, I think we can pick so many different episodes for different moments or favorite lines mm-hmm. or favorite just moments that happen within the story that set up maybe more of our knowledge of the realm in general, like time passing differently, or the different lands, like, how big is this place? Why is most mm-hmm. of your rock and desert? Seems like very, like, there should be more meadows and fields. There's a lot of desert Rocks.
Well, there was a lot, yeah. And I wonder how much of that is because of Venger. Like, is he responsible for some of the destruction, you know, that's just ravished the land? I don't know, but I mean, yeah, there's definitely, it's not like, so on Thundercats, you know, Third Earth, there's all sorts of environments. So we have, yeah, the bogs, you know, and the marshes, but then we have the cold mountains, but then we have just the lush prairies and jungles, and it all seems to kind of be really close together for some reason. I don't know how that works, but okay. But yeah, you're right. That is something that I noticed as well. There's just a lot of rock and desert and things like that. And it did seem very barren. So yeah. I wonder if it's part of that, you know, is because of Venger. So I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Like some of it, like in Eye of the Beholder. The Beholder was the one who like decimated the land of the valley until mm-hmm. they defeated them, and then it came all back lush.
It came all back, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, some of it's probably due to the bad guys, but yeah, it's interesting. See this realm.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, you mentioned four of them. Did you get them all out?
Oh, actually, Kimmy covered most of them, but the one I
got to.
But I wanted to mention the traitor, because that's another really dark one. So it's not my favorite, but I just really liked it because I haven't really seen that lesson, that plot twist in a cartoon where like you're in a situation and you don't have any choice and you're forced to do bad things to protect somebody you love. Like, what's the message there? And I think the message I took from that is you have to talk to people. You have to let your friends know what's going on so they can support you, no matter mm-hmm. how bad. You have to let them know. So I just, and then also I got to read the original script. It was by Jeffrey Scott, and there was some really cool stuff that unfortunately had to be cut out for time, like a long trial, right. Hank on trial in the script. It was
wow, like,
yeah,
that would have been cool.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think that was like a first draft of the script. Because I know the one you mean. And yeah, the whole second half of it was like, yeah, the trial, it was so different. And they had a lot of like lines that had switched between Eric and Sheila than around the episode we know, which was interesting. But yeah, the whole trial, like, yeah, like what if, what could have been? Could have been an hour long. What would it have been like, you know, more filler. Really neat.
I'm surprised there was a... there was as few episodes as we got, because especially around this time, there was that real push for, you know, syndication. That's how they got around some of the standards and practices, you know, and censoring, was selling it straight to some of these local, you know, these local stations. So I'm surprised there was only 26, 27 episodes?
27, I think.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Whereas, you know, you get like 65 episodes in a season for like He-Man or, you know, or G.I. Joe or some of these others. And so for a show that was written so well, that had literally the sky was the limit, because, you know, you're not bound by like all the rules that you are here on Earth. I mean, it seems like they could have done so much with it. So I'm surprised that the first season was only like 13 episodes. It was only like 6 or 7 the next one. I mean, it just seems like so short. That's kind of a bummer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely would have, we all wanted more.
Yeah. More.
For another season, at least.
Yeah. Do you, so I know in Requiem, you know, which is the unproduced, technically, you know, finale, in the original script, they kind of left it up in the air, didn't they? Of whether or not they return home. I think when the fan edition of it that came out, I think they all just return home. Which ending would you prefer? Like, did you want them to go home, or would you prefer them to stay?
You know, I absolutely adored how I believe it was Ryan who did the fan version that we know on YouTube of Requiem by, like, oh my gosh, so much work he put into that. It was just astounding. But how he finished it and gave everybody the closure that we needed for so many years. I really appreciated his version. So I really, I did like that he ended it that way.
The closing scene where they show the children walking out from the roller coaster was like, oh, gave me chills. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
I got to. Yeah.
But why do we think that there was a version where Presto chose to stay? I feel like maybe that was somebody else's interpretation of her something. I felt like Presto would choose to stay because of Varla. And
he needed
to be the magician. So I could be making that up.
I don't recall. Well, Bobby, didn't he meet like his future love interest as well in one of the episodes? So I could see why he'd want to go back. But also at the same time, he had like a strong connection with Uni. You know, I feel like torn, like, would he really want to go back or would he stay? You know, it's like giving up like your best friend. Well, I mean, it's rough.
Yeah, that you brought that up because it's almost like he has to go back at some point. Whether he returns or not was very open-ended, but it was in her vision that he did go back to give her, return her locket to him, or he returned it, her locket to her, rather. So we kind of know Bobby gets back at some point when he's still like roughly the same age. So that's kind of neat that they set things up that way. But all those moments where he had to say goodbye to Uni.
Oh, I know. Every time.
Like Day of the Dungeon Master. For little Uni, she's like, bye, bye.
Which probably should mention that Frank Welker did the voice of that. Frank Welker is super famous as like every cartoon animal ever. but between him and Don Messick, it's like they've got it all covered. Peter Cullen was also in this. I mean, he did Avengers voice, which was strange to me as a kid because I was so used to him as Optimus Prime. You know, like he was always like the good guy. And then in Christmas Comes to Pacland, he was, you know, he was Santa. So it's like Peter Cullen, like, was always equated with, like, goodness and like, you know, just the best, the most noble to me. And then all of a sudden to hear him voicing Bender, it was like my brain almost exploded. It was just like, what?
Yeah, what a voice, though. It's interesting. I just for curiosity's sake, I went on YouTube and watched one of the Brazil versions to listen to having seen like certain episodes so many times, I got the gist of what was going on in the other language, but to hear the characters talk, it was so strange to hear like we're so used to like Eric or Sheila, like the nuances and their tone and you know, to their voice. And they seem so much more flat to me, the kids. But when I got to Venger, their Venger was very gruff and very gravelly sounding. I'm like, all right, yeah, he sounds angry and villainous, but he doesn't have Peter Cullen like that Venger melodious menace to his voice that we're so used to. I'm like, oh, it's so different. It was really neat to hear, especially since it's so big over there, it seems. But yeah, the different, like Peter Cullen, like that's Benjer, man. That's Benjer.
Which, speaking of Brazil, the commercial, that car commercial, what did y'all think? Because I thought it was like amazing.
That was so fun to see.
Yeah. I was like super jazzed. I wanted more. Like, let's do a live action series now.
Keep going.
Well, they left it open for a sequel because you saw, wasn't Venger one of the security guards at the park and his eyes were glowing?
He was, yeah. Yeah, but... he was one of the mounted cops, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be so really cool. Fantastic. But I guess this is a Christmas show, we probably should talk about the Christmas story. So this is called Season of Goodwill. It's in the 1987 UK Dungeons & Dragons annual. The story, I quite like the way it was written because I could actually picture it playing out. You know, just now having seen these characters for so long, I mean, it actually sounded very much like one of the shows. I thought it was well done. Personally, what did y'all think?
Except for maybe some moments where things seem maybe a little twisted, a little out of character. Like sometimes what I would think, gosh, that doesn't really sound like Presto talking. That sounds something more Eric would say when he's confronting Dungeon Master in an instance or anything. Like, except for little things like that. Like, yeah, the basic plot is a really interesting episode. Would make a really interesting episode, the way it sets up. And a little bittersweet, though. A little bittersweet.
It is.
Go home for Christmas.
I know. I felt so bad for them. I felt so bad. But yeah, so it of course, after going through another dangerous trial, at this point, you're right, Presto, which I see exactly what you're saying. And I think I agree now that you brought it up, something I hadn't thought about, but it does seem more like Eric should probably have been saying it, because it sounds like something we've heard from him before. But so Presto's just had it. He realizes, you know, it's Christmas time. Like, we should be home with family. And so he is just so upset. And so he calls, you know, and the Dungeon Master appears. And he kind of just has it out with Dungeon Master. I felt so bad for him, because you can, like, just, I can just visualize the sadness on his face. You know, the same sadness in the Dragon's Graveyard, when they're finally like, no, we have to take out Venger, you know, and he's like, oh, okay, fine, it's come to this. I mean, I felt so bad for him. But yeah, so they talk to Dungeon Master. He's like, fine, I can send you home, because they accuse him of being able to sending them home at any time. And so he's like, yes. And so he kind of snaps his fingers, and they're in the Singing Sands, which I thought was a cool concept, the Singing Sands. And so they're walking through, and they just hear, hey, it's, you know, it's, I hear this carol, and I hear this carol, you know, what is it, Hark the Heralding, or Good King Wenceslas, and Oh Come All You Faithful, and they hear all these different carols. But quickly they, like, all start merging together, you know, in, like, these winds, and it's just a cacophony at this point. It's unbearable for them, and so they escape to these caves, which turned out to be caves of ice. Dun, dun, dun. Insert scary D&D music here. They go down into the caves, and they realize it's getting cold. Everything is made of ice, but they come across a reflection pool, and in the pool, they're able actually to see, like, home and Christmas and just everything that they've been longing for. And you just feel the hurts and the nostalgia and everything. And I felt so bad for them at this point. It broke my heart, really.
Yeah, you can just envision, like, oh, Christmas dinner. Oh, look, the presents under the tree. Oh, look, that's like our family scene. And just... yeah, very bittersweet.
It's funny, because it seems straight out of Harry Potter, but this definitely predated Harry Potter, right? But I went,
yeah.
Well, I'm like, oh, it's that mirror again. Mirror of Erised, yes.
Erised, yeah, yeah.
Being your heart's desire.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling ripped this off. Spread that around. No, I'm just kidding. but yeah, so of course, Venger happens to be looking on, because he's always interested in the kids. He wants their weapons. And so he's looking on. He sees that they've entered the caves of ice, and he knows that, you know, they're either going to freeze to death and it's his chance to steal the weapons, or he can confront them and steal the weapons anyway. So good old Venger, always trying to steal their weapons.
But then he flies off laughing, and Venger never laughed in the cartoon. He had no sense of humor whatsoever in the cartoon.
Yeah, another one of those liberties they take. Yeah.
Yeah, no evil laughter.
I would have liked to hear Peter Cullen's Venger laugh, I think. I think it'd be interesting. Because I don't think it would be so cartoon villainish. I think he would have brought a little bit more to it. But yeah, he calls Nightmare. You know, Nightmare's his horse, of course. And they start flying. But, like, the winds the winds of the Singing Sands and you know, all that, they like overtake him, and he's almost like just thrown off his steed, and he almost, I guess, dies or something until he's able to like be pushed far enough away that it doesn't bother him anymore, and then he can, you know, map out his route that he's going to take. Which you'd think, you know, Vendor would have thought about that earlier, or maybe just his hubris. He just thought he was too powerful for it.
Well, I think because the kids started having the songs in their heart.
Oh, you're right. That's what it was. Yeah.
Maybe that the winds became that much more unpredictable and fearsome. So that I don't know if Vendor would have expected that. Because, like, no one's silly enough to try to go think of songs in that singing sands, because no one was going to happen except for the kids, as they found out what happened too late. But I think maybe that, at least that's what I gave
no,
them
I think
a
you're right. Yeah.
Pass on that one.
But, well, he's blown off course, but he, like, he is blown towards Tiamat's lair, and he's like, okay, she didn't see us. We're good. Well, one of her eyes did. Tiamat, of course, being the five-headed dragon, you know, basically is like the biggest threat in this entire realm here. Which they mention in here that like her head's breathing fire, but didn't her heads breathe? I remember them breathing like other things. Like each head had a different, right? Like there was a one that did the poison gas, one that was like acid. Of course, the fire-breathing one. Was there an ice one, too?
It's ice and electricity.
Electricity, that's the one, yes.
The lightning, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of strange. So, oops, again, they don't know, like, their whole history here or something. I don't know, but either way, that, you know, I can forgive that for a good Christmas story. We cut back to the kids. They're enjoying all this Christmas warmth that they're seeing. They don't realize they're also just kind of freezing to death in the caves. Yuni does, though. Yuni also realizes that there are things coming after them. And it's not until a tear from, was it Sheila or Diana's nose? I don't recall, but it's not until a tear from one of Diana, yeah, that it hits the pond, you know, and then the mirror cracks and everything just kind of disperses, and they realize they can see the reflection that there are some ice soldiers coming. The ice soldiers, though, I gotta say, they looked not great. I guess that's the best way to say it. They I think they could have been designed a little bit better. We got some really cool designs in the cartoon, and you know, I think of like the demo dragon or something, and just to see some of these ice soldiers, it was a little bit of a letdown. Yeah, but so they try their best to fight off the ice soldiers. It's not working out too well, because though Diana is able to actually break one, it immediately reforms. Plus, everybody else is freezing. They're barely able to keep it together and move just because of how cold it is. I mean, it's kind of a scary thing here, and I felt claustrophobic reading it.
Yeah, definitely. I could feel like that, well, especially in New England area, how chilly it could be, and how like stiff your fingers are, and just how much you don't want to move, and how heavy limbed everything is when you get really chilly.
See, and I'm in Texas, so we don't really get that. The closest we got was like last winter with that, what they called it, Snowmageddon, which I'm sure was like nothing for y'all. You know, that's like the coldest that it's ever been here, and it was like 16 degrees or something. So I don't really understand, mostly because I'm used to like 100, 112 degree heat. So,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and the highest I think it ever got was 114 when I was in high school. And I was in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, and so it was just humid. We were so close to the Gulf that it was like ridiculously humid. Like you'd walk outside and you immediately would just, the heat would stick to you. And I remember going to marching band practice and, you know, just marching and it was like 114 degrees outside, but usually it only gets up to about 107 or something. So, yeah. But so we don't get that cold. Oh, they're on their way outside, and Venger and Tiamat are actually fighting, which I wouldn't want to be a part of that. Like, get me away from there. But this is where we get Tiamat, like, breathing her fire, you know, her hands, you know, I'm going to put that in your quotes, breathing fire. And as they're trying to get away from these ice soldiers, because really all they can do is run, they can't fight, she manages to scare Venger away and blow her fire down one of the tunnels and create, like, several new tunnels just by melting the ice. And so they're able to actually escape. Or no, they don't actually melt the ice. I think it's so hot that it actually vaporizes, right? It goes straight from ice to steam, I think.
I think it created a whole new tunnel that melted a new passageway out. And then, yeah, all that water just rushed out and vaporized the soldiers.
Yeah, which was nice.
One big slushy mess.
And so they were able to escape, and without Tiamat even really noticing them. And so, because of all this and the winds from the sand and all this ice and cold, it ends up kind of snowing. And this is where, you know, they realize, hey, it's snowing on Christmas night. The Dungeon Master shows up, and then he gives them their next thing to start their next mission. You know, a warning, a key, and like a map or something. But I like how he's pulled up in almost like a little cart, you know, and they think for a bit that it's Santa. Yeah, it makes me want to see like Dungeon Master with the big old beard and, you know, the Santa hat. I guess he would kind of fit into that that C. Clement Moore's poem, you know, right, jolly old elf. I guess so. I don't know. That's right. He's already got the red on. It's why not? Let's do it. But that was Season of Goodwill. There really isn't much else with Dungeons & Dragons and Christmas. You mentioned there was like another winter tale in the 86 annual with the witch that kind of looks like the evil queen in her witch form from Disney.
Yep.
And in one of those, not Choose Your Own Adventure, it was what the brand similar to Choose Your Own Adventure. Like, it was like a Pick Your Own Adventure or something like that. Pick Your Own Path. Yeah, something like that. And they're in one of those books, Presto summons a Christmas tree accidentally. So that's really all that has to do. But I thought it was a charming little story. Nothing fantastic. But at the same time, I could see it like being developed as a full episode. And I think it would have been really cool if they had done it.
You know, I think what I found interesting was that in this story, it tended to mention characters that were toys. From the toy line, like they mentioned, like Zarek the half-orc in the beginning, and then they call out to her, like when they hear the commotion between Venger and Tiamat, and they think they hear a dragon, they're like, oh, is it the bronze dragon? Strongheart.
I am Strongheart. I am honored to meet you.
It's interesting that they were putting in a few maybe toy line characters from there.
Which is funny because at this point the toy line, I mean, it was gone. I mean, no one really was buying or selling them at this point. Maybe it just took a little bit longer overseas. I know, speaking with some of my guests on some of these other issues, that they wouldn't get some of the shows over there until like a few years later. Same thing with some of the toys. So perhaps that's what it is. They're just trying to sell the toys in Europe now. I don't know, but I think it would have been cool if we had gotten some of these characters or more of these characters in the show as well. But that's just because I was a little boy with toys and I like to see my toys on screen. So that's really all. But
that was fun to kind of see him. Like, I don't know about Zarek, but like I think it was the second and third season intros. They do have the half-orcs make a quick appearance. Like when they go like nose to nose with Eric.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's supposed to be the toy line, but maybe a little nod to it. Who knows?
Could be, yeah.
I don't remember a bronze dragon in the episodes.
A baby one, I think.
Yeah, that was a gold one.
Yeah. Oh, that was gold.
Oh, golden eggs. Oh. But yeah, it was interesting to see It was a charming little story. It had potential.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of those I've noticed in these UK comics and things like that. It's like it's almost there. You know, it's the nugget of the story was perfect. It's just everything, the trappings just weren't quite finished. Yeah, that's really all. But, you know, it does make me wonder, what would you guys say would be your happiest memory or moment with Dungeons & Dragons?
I think for me, that anticipation of waiting for that next episode to start and there suddenly you get that intro coming out next on Dungeons & Dragons. You get that preview, that quick preview before they go into the intro. That was pretty like, what's going to happen this week? That was so exciting. Just that pure anticipation of the next new episode. That was really cool.
Right on. What about you, Leslie?
So back in the late 90s and early 2000s, I actually had a fan website on this cartoon. It was called Zach's Realm. And about 2000, Fox bought the cartoon and was going to re-air it for the first time in 20, or wasn't 20 years then, but yeah, first time since the 80s. And the excitement, we all sat around and were online and texted each other as it was on. And I even was so excited. I posted a log of the chats as we were watching the first episode to be on forever and ever. And they had made some changes to the music and an opening theme song and stuff, but it was the old cartoon and it was on TV again. Like, oh, yay. So I think that's probably my happiest memory.
That's cool. I wish I'd remembered that. I don't remember that at all, which is a shame because I would have been there. Same thing. I would have been there watching it. That's super cool. And for me, I think it would have to be watching it with my kids. I think just enjoying it and then just wondering like what happens next and wanting to watch another episode. I think that was just, it was special, you know, like just they got to feel how I felt when I was that young. And so it was really cool. So I think that would definitely be mine. But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with a Spoon. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part. Now, it doesn't have to be something we don't like. It's just something that we don't like as much as something else. As the guests, I'll let y'all go first. Just kind of set up the scene a little bit for us and then go from there.
Well, I can go first if you want. The cringiest scene in all of Dungeons & Dragons is the cloud bearers of the traitor. And at one point, early in the episode, they say they can't do anything against the orcs that are attacking them. All they have is fruit and nuts, so they throw fruit and nuts at the orcs. As somebody said, they basically fuck them off with granola. Then the orcs attack again, and they do this, what Eric calls the game of patty cake. They say, cloud bears call to cloud so high, help us save our home and sky. And they have these amulets that are glowing. They had magic the whole time. And I don't remember actually what happens next. I'm usually going, oh, that is for me the creepiest scene in all of D&D. It's a great episode otherwise, but cloud bears.
Nope, let's just throw fruit and nuts at them. That's all. That's awesome. Oh, what about you, Kimmy?
Actually, the little patty cake song was my cringiest moment.
Nice.
The little nasally voices singing their little nursery rhyme.
That's awesome.
Yeah, probably right up there for cringiest moments.
And of course, Eric, right afterwards, says, well, now why didn't I think of that? A game of patty cake will stop an army of raging orcs any day.
Eric has some great lines. As awful as he initially was as a character, he had some good lines. He really did. I probably could have picked anything by Eric from those first few episodes, but I actually picked one from Valley of the Unicorns. And the only reason I picked it is because for some reason, the way Bobby says it just annoys the mess out of me. So this is when Venger comes to visit Kellick and he's like, Venger says something like, I see you've got, you know, all these unicorn horns for me, you know, and he goes to reach for him and he can't. And he tells Kellick to, you know, to drop the spell, and he says, yes. And he's like, yes, what? Yes, master. And so then Bobby says something like this. Somebody's getting in trouble. It's like, come on, man. It makes sense. He's 9. I get it. But it just, that always bothered me. No, but there were some really great lines too in the whole series. And I know, Kimmy, you had said you could probably quote just tons of your favorite lines.
Yeah, picking a bad one was harder.
Yeah.
favorite lines? Oh my goodness. I think like we're going opposite. One of my absolute favorite lines is like from Dragon's Graveyard. And it's when they just finished talking with Dungeon Master and they make their choice and they're going to go find Tiamat and see if she'll help them against Bender. And like they're about, Higgs like, all right, you heard him. Let's get going. And they all just stop and stand there for a minute. And then finally Sheila goes up to Hank and she's like, Hank, if we find Tiamat and if we convince her to help us against Bender, what do we do with him once we've got him? And that question, like she goes right up to him to ask this serious question, just sets everything up for that episode, yeah. You know? And then he just answers whatever it takes, you know? It just, oh, it's such a good moment. Just a great line. Like just sets that episode up.
I just got chills just thinking about it. Yeah.
Chills. Awesome. Yeah, that's probably like my favorite.
Yeah, that's super cool. And isn't in that one, it's like confirmed? Well, I guess nothing's really confirmed, but isn't that where he actually calls Bender like my son? And mm-hmm. So it's like he is his son?
Yeah, like were you at the end of the episode the first time you watched it with your jaw down here? I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Like I think we're all like, well, did he mean that? Like family son? Or was he just saying that as like a... You know, like my son, you know, like you're my pupil, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
Like what did he mean? Like, that's his kid. What? No, it can't be his kid. Look at him. They're like Bender. Bender masters. Like, Simon, there's no way. He doesn't even have a nose. Come on.
Well, and then isn't he redeemed in Requiem? Like, isn't Bender? He kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, yeah. Then. Yeah, we still don't see the resemblance, but go ahead.
Villains just don't have noses, you know?
No, they're not.
More I think about it, the more I think J.K. Rowling did rip off some of this. No,
villains.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's yeah. Like Bender, Skeletor, Mumra. Who else we got, guys? I don't know. All the wizards.
Voldemort?
All the wizards.
Wizards just don't have noses. Yeah. Well, I guess later on, after he's mutated, Cobra Commander.
Yeah, right?
But, you know, it does make me wonder. So G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half is?
I think it's... stay away from baby unicorns because they're bad luck.
the other half of the battle is coming up with innovative but non-violent ways to use archery in a big ass club in an 80s cartoon so that kids can't be Bobby and you know knock down actual trees on their siblings. So I would
right. Yep. Can't get past those sensors if you can. Stay within bounds. Those are both very good. They're better than mine. So I thought if knowing's half the battle, the other half is not turning into a bog beast so you can make it home and your friends don't have to come rescue you.
Right? There we go. There you go.
Oh, man. Leslie, Kimmy, it's been so much fun talking with you. Any final thoughts on Season of Goodwill or D&D in general?
Maybe with the, you know, one thing I did find that was kind of sweet about the Season of Goodwill was towards the end when it starts snowing. I think it was Sheila. She's like snow, it's snowing and it's Christmas night. And just that moment, they're in a realm of magic And yet snow on Christmas night was magical, a magical moment. I thought that was very sweet.
And it's very Sheila, right? I mean, she's the one that like goes to make friends with people, and her friendship like helps bring, you know, villains back in some cases, you know, Vendor's sister. I can't think of her name at the moment. But yeah, I mean, it seems like something she'd say.
Yeah, I just thought that was cute.
Yeah.
Christmas moment, because it is when you see snow, at least in the northern hemisphere part of the states, when you expect snow, when you see it on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, it's very magical in the real world.
Well, here, I mean, down south here too, we just, it's usually a green Christmas. So when we get a white Christmas, it's definitely magical. Yeah.
That was good. I like that.
Yeah. Well, in that case, then I'll just go ahead and say thanks again. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. And I'll end it by saying, snow, it's Christmas night and it's snowing. This really is like the Yuletide. All we need now is to check us out on our social media pages, Facebook and Instagram at Totally Rad Christmas and Twitter at Rad Christmas. And if you're feeling like the champion's finally returning home, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to check out our merch shop on tpublic.com and our brand new website, totallyradchristmas.com, courtesy of Tis the Podcast Elf, Tom Crow. May fortune smile on you over Christmas time. And may you use your gifts to find your way onwards and out of the realms of Dungeons and Dragons. Later, dudes.
Love. Family. Traditions. Presents. Pumpkins. Fireworks. Santa Claus. All make you think of holidays, right? Well, what about murder? Heartbreak. Gangsters. And witchcraft. Still thinking about holidays? Beginning this February, I will take you on a journey to the lesser-known sides of the holidays, the sides history might try to forget, the celebrations that you might not be familiar with. Oh, and don't worry, I'll be sprinkling in some elements of normal holiday traditions too. After all, even those of us with a dark side still have a special place in our hearts for the Easter Bunny, Valentine's candy, cute jack-o'-lanterns and ghosts, and of course, all things merry and bright. Let's uncover and celebrate the strange and unusual together. I'm your host, Kristen, and this is Holidays After Dark.